Welcome to everybody listening all around the world, all across the United States. We are coming to you live from the Disclosure Beacon, the radar towers, the radio antenna array, which is the Coast to Coast AM studios right here in Los Angeles, California. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George Norrie again on this Friday evening. Heading into the early morning hours of Saturday, it's another Friday night on Coast. We've got open lines. It's all going to happen right here. Now, and since it's Friday, and that means open lines, we have my guest tonight is Stephen Greer. And I cannot wait for the phone calls that are going to come in tonight after you hear our conversation. I'm really looking forward to it. But 2 weeks ago, I was at the premiere of Dr. Greer's new film. It's called Unacknowledged, right here in downtown Los Angeles, California. And for me, it was great to see Hollywood and a major film studio get behind a documentary like this, which represents us, our community, and what we've been pushing for and yelling about for so, so long. And the big D word, that's right, disclosure. Probably the number one question that I get in person, email, post, Twitter, Facebook, social media, doesn't matter, text, callers into this show and my other shows, is when are we finally going to have real disclosure? Well, obviously, I don't have the answer for that. But I do feel that we are getting some form of it from many directions nearly every single day. But the word disclosure itself is starting to become mainstream. And as I sat and watched the film, I had one thought that kept coming back to me over and over again. And I was happy about it, and I was probably grinning. And that thought was, this is the film that truly reveals the UFO question, the conspiracy, the secrets, all of it, the potential impact it has for the human race and our planet. It exposes all of that to the world, and the world needs to see it. Not my friends, not my family. That's not what I'm going for here. What I'm suggesting is, who needs to see this film? It's the person that has never heard of Roswell, and that film has arrived. And that is a big chunk of the planet. And I need you to think about that for a second. And that's what we are going to discuss tonight. The impact of this film potentially could be ginormous. And it's also pretty pleasing on the eye. So enjoy the conversation tonight, Dr. Stephen Greer. The last time he was on with us, and I didn't even realize this, it was nearly exactly a year ago, May, with me on a Friday night on this broadcast. So it's been a year. He's been working on this film. We talked about it back then. The film is out. It's in release. Tonight, my guest is Dr. Stephen Greer. You can follow me now on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Simple enough. You know the drill. Twitter is always live to my left right here in the studio. The studio is dark tonight, by the way. You've seen the pictures I just tweeted out. Any questions or comments, you can post them, and just maybe your tweet will get read on the air. You know, I'll catch it here in the studio. Tom has got his eye in it right there behind the glass, right in front of me. And also, I want to say, enjoy the bumper music tonight, because I spent a lot of time on it today. Took a lot of suggestions from you out there on social media. Thank you for that. And I put a little bit of a theme. So I would love to see your comments. And if somebody picks up on the theme, I'll read your tweet on the air. Sitting in for George Norrie, I'm your host, Jimmy Church, and I'll be right back with my guest, Dr. Stephen Greer. This is Coast to Coast AM. All right, welcome back to Coast, sitting in for George Norrie tonight. He's taking a well-deserved Friday night off. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. And so get ready. This is a conversation that I've been looking forward to for the last 2 weeks. Dr. Stephen Greer is the founder of the Disclosure Project, the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, CSETI, the Orion Project, and of course, Sirius Technology and Advanced Research, LLC. He has worked for 20 years to bring together the scientists, inventors, and leaders in society to advanced clean technology and energy systems, and he is considered one of the world's foremost authorities on the strategic process of transforming our carbon-based civilization to a long-term sustainable civilization using innovative sciences and technology. His film, Sirius, was one of the most successful crowd-funded documentaries in history. And now, he and his team have produced Unacknowledged, an expose of the greatest secret in human history, which premiered here in Los Angeles 2 weeks ago on April 24th, 2017. And I would like to welcome back to Coast our friend, Dr. Stephen Greer. Stephen, good evening, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you?
It's only been 2 weeks, but congratulations first. How has the last 2 weeks been since the premiere for you?
Hectic. You can imagine. I mean, we're in full launch mode for both the film and the book, and interviews from all over the world. And thanks to everyone listening, we are number one on iTunes for documentaries and number 16 for all movies on iTunes. And we're number 10 for all movies in the United Kingdom. And people say, well, why is that important? Because this is how disclosure happens. You put together the best evidence. You put together the reasons for the secrecy, how it's been kept secret, what the motives have been for the secrecy, and you put it into something that the average person on the street can understand, and it goes as far as we can get it to go. And that's why it's so important for everyone listening who cares about getting the truth out and disclosure happening to get behind this and tell all their friends and family.
Well, I wanted to ask you this question again that I asked you 2 weeks ago on the red carpet. And through the hectic day that was with that many people there, you probably didn't get a chance to answer this question. there was a lot going on. So I'm going to ask it again. And this sure. It's this. To have Hollywood and a major film studio behind a project like this is tough to do. How does that make you feel pushing this into the mainstream to an audience that potentially has no clue about Roswell or the UFO phenomenon in general, but now this genuine push is moving forward? What is it like to have Hollywood and that machine behind you?
Well, it's really great because, you know, back in about 20 years ago, we had a major studio that one of their star producers wanted to do a full-length feature film on this based on a true story. And he had $60 million to do it with. And he's one of the biggest producing people in Hollywood, Arnold Kupelson at that time. And he was not allowed to do it, even though he was supposed to have discretion over that fund. So there's been a sea change. What's happening is that there's another generation of people coming along who are shaking off, if you will, the shackles of the corruption in the big media. And I think one of the interesting things that are both in the book and in the movie is the intelligence community, Air Force officer, as well as the constitutional attorney, Daniel Sheehan, who separately testified to the fact that the intelligence community have corrupted the mainstream media to suppress this information. In fact, the Air Force intelligence officer, whose job it was to do counterintelligence and even disinformation, came clean in the movie, this three-hour interview I did with him, and said point blank that he used to carry bags of cash to people in the media to affect how they covered the story and to give him intelligence on what was going on in the media. So the public needs to understand that it's a new era beginning to dawn between the internet and also independent films like this. This film, by the way, I want to thank everyone who contributed. 5,000 people contributed funds to make this film happen, as well as the book. And there was no funding for the film that was from a big corporation or studio. The distribution is through a big studio, but the actual creation of the film, the content, we had 100% control over the content of the film and the messaging. Normally, you give that up when you work with these big corporations that are almost universally corrupt.
Right.
And I have to say, the Orchard, which is a division of Sony, but it's an independent company, the Orchard has been amazing at from the top down. I mean, from the head of the film division down to everyone in that office have been amazingly supportive of this. And it's not just that they see, you know, a business opportunity. That's the least of it. They actually get the message. They think it's an important message to give to the world. And I didn't know it, but the top people in that studio were donors to the first film we did, Sirius. And I didn't know it until they approached me and said, look, we really want to support you in getting this one out in a much larger way. And I said, great, let's do it. Let's roll. And that was a little over a year ago. And, in less than a year, we produced the film and this book. And the book, by the way, has about, I hope you got a copy of the book,
Jim. I do. Thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. It has about 10 times more information even than the film does. So I think that, you know, what I felt is that this has been a long time coming, but I think we are seeing a sea change in disclosure. And, you know, back in, almost 20 years ago when I coined the term disclosure, which is now gone, as you pointed out in the introduction, kind of mainstream.
Right.
And founded the disclosure movement globally. What I found at that time was that people did not really understand the implications and why this should be an important issue to cover. That's beginning to change. And you're going to see in the next week or two some amazing coverage in some unlikely places in the media that are beginning to cover this. And I mean, one interview I have set up for when I'm in LA next week is from a group that has 80 or 90 million people a month looking at their material. So this is what we need to do. We need to do this and keep this momentum going. And but it's really very grassroots. I mean, in a sense, it's gratifying to see the Orchard and get behind it. But in reality, everything from the premiere to the creation of the film and the book, that was all done by the grassroots effort of thousands of people.
Who was the film made for when you set off to do this? And I've been talking to you about this film now for almost 2 years, if you think about it.
Yep.
Who was the focus? Who was this film made for?
Well, it was really made for people like my wife's family, who are just regular folks, but Ivy League educated, don't believe in anything you can't put in a test tube,
right?
Super skeptical, enormously skeptical. One of them used to be the city editor of the Boston Globe, and she flat out said to me, I don't care if you put a dead ET body on my desk, we wouldn't cover it in the Boston Globe because we're a blue chip paper and this is a subject covered by the National Enquirer. I said, yes, but that's by design. But she wasn't part of the intelligence community. She was just part of the culture of ridicule and had bought into the whole ridicule. So when I was putting this film together with the director and the production crew of Michael Mazzola and Stephen Peake and Aurorus Media, what I looked at was, what would you want to put in front of someone if you had an hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes, that would have the evidence, explain how the secrecy has been maintained through these unacknowledged special access projects, which is the proper name for a deep black super secret project, and what, how would you explain why it's been kept secret? And so it's really going from A to B to C in a way that's engaging, well, to the extent that we could. Now, remember, we had a few hundred thousand dollars to make this film, not $8 or $10 million or $100 million like is usually spent in Hollywood. But I think that the team did a really good job of it. I'm not a filmmaker, but my contribution was to provide the narrative, the creative elements, the research, the military witnesses, all that sort of thing, and the sort of the big picture. But in terms of filmmaking, when you think that, you know, this was a very small team with a very relatively small budget as Hollywood goes, I think they really did a great job. And interesting, if you go on IMDb and iTunes and Amazon, look at the reviews, it's getting a really wonderful reviews from all over the world. And so I think that the purpose of the film was really so that the man on the street, like if you have a member of your family, all you millions of people listening, and they go, this can't be. Well, you sit them down. If they can spend an hour and a half looking at this film, at the end of it, and we've heard from academic people who have already written to us about this, they go, oh my God, this really might be true. And so that's why we did it. We didn't do it for the echo chamber or the UFO subculture per se. We really did it for the other 7 billion people on
Right,
Earth.
Right, right. And Stephen, it's really evident and it's really well done. But I wanted to ask you this as we head into the break. The first 5 minutes of the film, it's going to shock some people because it's very, very emotional, and it's not going to be what they expect. But it certainly sets a tone for the message for the other hour and a half that's to follow. Whose idea was that, that first 5 minutes of the film? Without giving it away, I want people to see the film, but whose idea was because that really, that'll make somebody cry. So whose idea was that?
Well, really that early opening concept was a collaboration between me and the director, Michael Mazzola.
Right.
But really the impact and putting it together was Michael Mazzola, who's a very brilliant young filmmaker.
I asked Michael about the intro of the film, and he said, man, we almost couldn't pull that off, but we did. And I'm glad noticed it. I mean, it really yanked at me, and it was really, really well done. And I encourage everybody to go see it. Then they will remember what you and I are talking about right now. They're going to go.
Absolutely.
That first 5 minutes is right there. Tell me really quick, what was it like working with Michael? He's a very, he's young, energetic. What was it like to work with a director like him?
Well, it was great. I mean, this is his first major film, really. And the reason we wanted to work with him as opposed to some megalomaniac director who'd already done a lot of them was that he was very informed about the subject. He was willing to collaborate. And I can't emphasize how hard that is to find amongst artistic and filmmakers. They don't want to collaborate. And really, a good film,
right.
Michael Mazzola said this, is a miracle of collaboration. And so he was willing to collaborate and learn, and he allowed me to have input. And, so often you get people who are filmmakers, and they just kind of go in their own direction. So this, we were able to collaborate to create this. And also Stephen Peek at Auroras Media here in Virginia was amazing at collaborating with Michael and myself in coming up with the finished product. It was a huge amount of work, I must say. It's not something I want to do every year. But I think that, and the other thing about Michael Mazzola is that he's really smart.
Yeah.
He's NYU film.
I
don't mean to sound like elitist at all, but I mean, to get your mind around the thousands of hours of military witness testimony we have, the thousands of pages of government documents, all that material and the complex narrative that's in it, and put that into an hour and a half, that is a very hard task, and it was very hard for us to make the editing cuts we had to make. But, he worked, diligently on it for a year, and we got it done.
Are you happy? Is there anything that you would change? I guess that's an easier question.
There are probably a couple of things I would change in some of the images that are used and whatnot. They're minor things. But I think overall it came out exactly what I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be a tour de force of the evidence and cases, and then an explanation of how super secret, unacknowledged special access projects or USAPs work. And then I wanted the public to understand why in the hell would it be this secret? And that all those issues are covered quite well and woven throughout the narrative over just like an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible film. And the one thing that I want, we're going to lead into a break here, but the time that you did between Sirius and this, but I can also see a part two. So you can answer that actually with one word. Is there going to be a part two to Unacknowledged?
there'll be a part three, because Sirius was sort of an overview of everything.
Right, right.
This one is drilling down deep on the national security state and the secrecy and the evidence. And there'll be a part three that's going to be probably the most shocking and mind-blowing thing that we'll do.
Let me jump in right there. We're going to take a break. Our guest tonight, Dr. Stephen Greer. We're talking about his new film, just premiered, Unacknowledged. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. We'll be right back. Our guest tonight, Dr. Stephen Greer. Now, Twitter is lighting up. I've got questions already in front of me. Thank you for that. Follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Get your questions in, and if they're good, they'll be read on the air. We're talking about his film, Unacknowledged, an expose of the greatest secret in human history. And more with Dr. Greer after this short break. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Coast, sitting in for George Norrie tonight. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest tonight is Dr. Stephen Greer, and we're talking about his film, Unacknowledged, an expose of the greatest secret in human history. Now, Dr. Greer, I have to ask you, the D word, right? Disclosure. For you, how would you like to see disclosure happen?
Well, I think the best way for it to happen at this point would be for the masses to do it. You know, a lot of people keep saying, well, when is the government going to do this and that? And I think that's putting it in the wrong perspective. A little bit of history here. Between 1992 and 2001, I spent a great deal of time meeting with everyone from people in the White House to the CIA director to people at the Pentagon and the head of the United Nations and elsewhere. The bottom line is these sort of folks don't want to take on the secret entities that are running these programs, who frankly have more power than they do. However, millions of people getting behind disclosure and not only supporting it, but also helping become field researchers who find military whistleblowers and corporate whistleblowers and government documents. You know, there are tens of thousands of people who've worked in these unacknowledged special access projects, which are by their very nature illegal operations. And we established in the 1990s that these projects were illegal, and therefore anyone could speak about them without any prosecution or fear of prosecution. And just as a side note, no one who has come forward has been prosecuted since we have made that determination. Therefore, I think we have to look at this and say, well, you know, if big government does it, will it be a truthful disclosure, or will it be something that will be spun? And by that I mean, will there be other agendas piggybacking on that, such as one of the themes of the movie Unacknowledged and the book. The book, by the way, is at Barnes & Noble and Amazon everywhere, and people should go and get it, because I think that's going to also move disclosure forward, that we can get on the New York Times bestseller list. But the one of the central points of it is that the false flag, what in military terms is called a deceptive indication and warning, value of the UFO subject began to be elucidated in the 1950s. Now, you know, before I was born. And in fact, when I was 4 months old in October of 1955, Douglas MacArthur stated that World War III will be interplanetary. So there are a lot of people who are warmongers and people who, I'm not talking your rank and file military, I'm talking about true sociopaths who have hijacked this issue into these super secret black projects, who would like to spring sort of a cosmic false flag on us, I call it, where they would hoax a threat from outer space and unite the world around some sort of military response. And
right,
even Ronald Reagan got brainwashed into this position where, you know, at the United Nations, there's a clip in the movie where he says, you know, gee, wouldn't our job of creating world unity and peace be easier if we had a common alien threat to unite against and fight? This kind of thinking is something that would only benefit the multi-trillion dollar military, industrial, intelligence, corporate complex that Eisenhower, a Republican military five-star general, warned us about when he left office. So I think that Now, if there was an honest and fair disclosure from the government, because there's a groundswell in the public which spills over into the media,
right,
that would be great. But I think we have to be vigilant. We have to be very careful that it doesn't get hijacked by the sociopaths into something that would end up being cataclysmic for the planet. And that is actually my deepest concern. A lot of people say, why did you make this movie now? And a big part of it was because a little over a year ago, I got a heads up that that agenda was being fast-tracked and that we needed to get ahead of the curve on it.
Stay in front of it. What do you think about WikiLeaks or some type of hacking and massive document dump through WikiLeaks, something that the government couldn't even control? Do you see that as a possibility?
Well, it's possible. It's unlikely because of the nature of these unacknowledged projects. They're way beyond the sort of things that, say, Edward Snowden or WikiLeaks has had access to. Those secrets actually aren't all that amazing. And I don't mean to rain on anyone's parade here, but for example, what Edward Snowden revealed were projects that were just the later day versions of what the New York Times reported in the early 2000s as projects Carnivore and Echelon from the National Security Agency. Moreover, those projects were being overseen by the president and the various intelligence committees of the House and Senate. I'm talking about projects dealing with the ET issue and the UFO issue, which are being denied access. Have denied access to the president and to CIA directors and to members of the Senate Intelligence Committee that I have personally met with. So we're talking about a level of secrecy and inaccessibility that is very, very hard to penetrate. Now, if there were people, and this is the important distinction, I am actually not someone who advocates hacking and leaking legal secret programs. Well, I want to make a clear distinction between the legal ones and the unacknowledged special access projects that have hijacked this issue since Eisenhower's time and which are being run completely as a criminal enterprise. That's different. And people say, well, how do you know that? Well, I mean, probably, and I don't want to toot my own horn here, but of anyone that you'll ever have on this show, I'm probably the only person who has been mano a mano with the head of Army Intelligence and the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency and many members of Congress and CIA directors and heads of state overseas, where they have made conscientious attempts to get on the inside of these secrets. And they haven't been told it doesn't exist. They've been told, we're not going to tell you. You don't have a need to know. And this is one of the shocking things. You know, I'll give you one little example. I've shared this before. The head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Wilson, asked me and Edgar Mitchell and some other folks to do a stand-up briefing. I actually did the briefing. Edgar Mitchell was my guest. And the astronaut who passed away a couple years ago, who supported disclosure. And before I got there, I sent him the National Reconnaissance Office document that's in the film and in the book that listed all the project code names and numbers as of the early 1990s. Now, this meeting was happening in 1997, 20 years ago this spring. And the Admiral, I learned, had made inquiries to some of those compartmented projects, secret projects. And he recognized one or two, although he didn't know what they were working on. And when he got hold of them, he said, look, you know, I'm Admiral Tom Wilson. I'm the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and I'd like to be read into or briefed on this project. And he was told flat out, you don't have a need to know, and we're not going to tell you anything. And they subsequently hung up on him. So now, you know, to the average man on the street, or even person in government, they'd be stultifying to learn that someone of his rank and stature and responsibility would have been shoved into the gutter and pushed aside by these fascists who have hijacked these programs. So I think that this is the kind of problem we're facing, and therefore, if someone does have a trove of documents or material, parts of an ET craft or ET genetic material or photographs or any evidence from these projects, I am inviting them to contact me in any way they wish. And if they want to remain anonymous, they may, and we will get it out to the public. And the reason I can say this with confidence is that we have run this up and down the chain of command in the United States and other governments. And since we can absolutely prove that high officials have been lied to and deceived, and trillions of dollars have been embezzled working on these projects, they are a criminal enterprise. And so they can't cite the National Security Act or any law to defend these criminal activities. And Daniel Sheehan, who's a constitutional attorney, a Harvard trained, concurs with this, as do many people in government that I've consulted. So anyone listening needs to understand that if you really want to see disclosure, just keep moving. You get more and more of these whistleblowers to come forward with documents, evidence, and information, and it becomes a tidal wave that cannot be denied by anybody. And most people are afraid to do it, but we don't need thousands of people to do it. But the more, if we have dozens and hundreds of people who continue to come out, that's how this can happen, with or without the cooperation of the cowardly politicians that tend to reside in Washington, D.C. or London or anywhere else.
Right, right. I have, that's a very interesting point, actually. And almost to that, I have a question here from Twitter from Terry. And he says, and he's obviously he's reading the book right now, Unacknowledged. And he says, who does Dr. Greer think invented the electromagnetic weapon that brought down the craft in 1947? And he wants to know if you think that that was Tesla. And he said that's from page 436 in the book.
Yes. The best we have been able to put that piece together. And, of course, one of the clues for this is an FBI document that's in the film and also in the book that's the most viewed document on the FBI official website. It became that way after we disclosed its legitimacy. And it's from a field agent to J. Edgar Hoover after the crash in Roswell. And it stated that the disks recovered, the objects recovered, were apparently because they collided with each other after, quote unquote, a high powered new radar system was switched on. I very much doubt that an interstellar vehicle is going to lose control because of a radar system being put on. However, some of the Tesla type or scalar longitudinal technologies that were being studied in the early 20th century and certainly throughout the 30s and 40s, if they were applied is an electronic disruption system, since these ET craft and man-made UFOs that are up there flying around are completely electronic and electromagnetic, they could cause them, when they're in this time and space, this dimension on Earth,
right,
to lose control and crash into each other. It turns out there were three ET craft that crashed in the Roswell area, which, of course, at the time was the only nuclear bomb squadron in the world. One was not found until, I believe, the early 1950s, because it was in such a remote area. But the two that were found pretty much right away, one was crushed to smithereens near Roswell. The other one impacted west of there near Socorro, and it was more intact. And, in fact, it was a living extraterrestrial biological entity even that lived until the early 1950s. But this is this brings up another question, and that is, how many times has that happened? Well, too many times. One of the people I've interviewed over the years who I could not get to go on the record was an officer at Fort Huachuca. And Fort Huachuca is in near Tombstone, Arizona, not far from where I'm going to be after I'm at Contact in the Desert next week.
Right.
And interestingly, this man worked in an underground facility where there were multiple ET craft and bodies that were stored that were from different civilizations that had been the result of using these type of electromagnetic weapons that had targeted them and hit them and knocked them down. So a lot of people say, well, you know, aren't these civilizations advanced enough to not have that happen? And I say, yes, 99.9% of the time. But you have to understand there have been thousands and perhaps millions of craft that have been around the Earth since we started blowing up atomic and hydrogen bombs.
That's right.
And you don't have to have a very high kill rate to get quite a few of these craft that you can then study and reverse engineer. And that is, in fact, what has happened. And the science behind this, a lot of people, because they think it's not being covered on CNN or in the New York Times, doesn't exist. In reality, anyone who studies the work of the early 20th century and Nikola Tesla and others will realize that there were very huge advances in electromagnetic sciences that got weaponized during the 1940s era. And in fact, during Operation Paperclip, which is the project when we brought over the Nazi scientists at the end of World War II, and this is a matter of historical fact, not a conspiracy theory at all. We brought in the most brilliant scientists who worked with Adolf Hitler. And in fact, one of the men I've met with in the last 6 months is the son of Senator John Warner. And Senator John Warner, he's retired now, not Mark Warner, there's a John Warner who is a member of the MJ-12, the Majestic Committee, and his son confirmed to me that during the later years of his grandfather's life, Paul Mellon, that he admitted that he, at the end of World War II, went over to Nazi Germany with George Patton and retrieved one of these Nazi anti-gravity discs. There was a bell-shaped craft and also a disc-shaped craft. So that is not a myth. So you have to understand that there's a whole part of 20th century history that is very secret, and it goes back well to and before World War II. And for Paul Mellon to say that to his grandson is pretty amazing admission that we had this sort of technology we were starting to study even before Roswell. But then you combine what was known at that time with studying and reverse engineering extraterrestrial vehicles that we use extremely advanced electromagnetic weapons to knock down. And you begin to realize this makes sense then why the senior scientist at the Naval Research Labs told me a few years ago that he was in quote unquote the vault and saw documents that flat out stated that we had mastered gravity control by October of 1954.
Let me jump in right there. We have to take a break, yeah. Dr. Greer, okay, so sure. We'll do that now. But what's interesting is, if you think about it, we can't even get anything to Mars and successfully land ourselves. Our guest tonight, Dr. Stephen Greer, we're talking about his new film, Unacknowledged. This is Coast to Coast. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. We'll be right back.